red cloak too, milady.
Yes, if you want it.
And Bane's curved sword, milady.
Brog pressed her.
If you can find it.
Where do you think it fell, milady?
Samina turned her eyes upward as if seeking patience.
Brog, I wouldn't know where the sword fell, or the eagle, or the fox. Just get out of my sight and don't bother me with details.
But what about... Yes, milady.
Earthclaw was first to reach the underground foundations of Kateir. Tunnelling steadily, he made his way along the underground wall until he met up with Billum. Together they continued until they linked up with Soilflyer, who was waiting for them.
Brr, day to we moles,
he greeted them.
For mole and out dinny be along with tools soon. Nothing can break through we rock then.
Lady Amber had sunk the floodgates at the other end of the tunnels. They were to be lifted by rope hoists attached to rock counterweights over high branches. Skipper and his crew had dug fresh tunnels from the river, sloping down to meet the floodgates, which separated them from the main tunnels. All the workings had been shorn up with stone and timber. Four moles supervised the removal of rocks from the foundations of Kateir. The moles pried away the soft, damp stones with bars and chisels, until they felt the cold, fetid air on their snouts.
Brr, ooh, dirty old place needing a good bath.
Shortly before nightfall, the moles climbed out of the tunnel workings. Back in Mossflower, where the woodlanders and Corrim leaders had assembled, Bella rolled three large rocks over the holes from which the moles had emerged. Others moved in to pack the bung rocks firmly in with wood and soil. Now everything was ready. Between the lower depths of Kateir and the distant river in Mossflower Woods, all that stood was three timber sluice gates. Lady Amber laid her tail flat on the lower branches of a sycamore. The woodlanders held their breath. Skipper nodded to Formole. Formole nodded to Bella. Bella nodded to Amber. The squirrel's tail rose like a starter's flag. There was a creaking of rope pulleys as squirrels launched the rocks from the high trees, riding down to earth on them, holding to the ropes. The counterweights travelled fast, humming across the heavily beeswax branches. The wooden floodgates made a squelching sound as they were pulled free of the earth. Then water began rippling through into the tunnels. The flooding of Kateir had begun.
Chapter 44.
Driving woodship inland against the flow of the River Moss was a difficult task. All paws manned the oar banks, and Martin sat alongside Timberlisto.
Phew! I never realised drawing was such heavy work.
Martin groaned.
Pull, my friend, pull! It's twice as bad when you have to do it on half rations, with a sea rat's whip cracking about your ears and you chained to the oar.
The vessel had been built for coast raiding. Though it was a large craft, it had a flat bottom for taking shallow draught. Thus, it was able to travel upriver without a deep keel sticking in the shallows. Inland they travelled, sometimes aided by a breeze when the sails were hoisted. Other times saw two teams dragging her forward on head ropes from the river banks. It took a day and a half of hard work to get across the flat beach and into the dunes, where the river was tighter channelled and flowed faster against them. Logalog solved the problem by using the long galley oars from the deck. Two crew to each oar. They punted and pushed woodship through the dunes, keeping her head up river with great difficulty. Gradually, the dunes gave way to hilly scrubland, and the sand began to disappear. It was a weary crew that sat upon the bank that night, watching the ship riding at anchor. Gonf hailed a clod of earth at the fast-flowing water.
We'll never make it this way, mateys. Why not abandon ship and march the rest of the way?
Herbal and Co. smiled sweetly.
Oh, you are a silly, Mr. Gonf. We must take the ship.
The river flows back to the sea, you see.
And we may need that to make a quick getaway if we are pushed.
Martin winked at Gonf.
The ladies certainly know their strategy. By the way, has anyone seen Logalog Big Club?
As if in answer, the shrew strode up out of the gathering gloom.
Aye, aye. I've been scouting ahead. Found the old village too. Come on, you lucky lot. There'll be a hot meal and a warm bed with a roof overhead tonight. Banksnout, you wouldn't recognise your little ones now. They're taller than me. Oh, Martin, I forgot to tell you. We've gained another 100 able-furred recruits.
Delight awaited them at the Shrew village, as families were reunited amidst cheering and shouting.
Daddy, Daddy, it's me, Emily, your baby Shrewlet.
Oh, look at you. You're bigger than your mum.
Sharptail, you said you were going for acorns. That was 4 seasons ago. Where have you been?
Oh, sorry, my dear. Sea rat, you know. What's this? Grand shrew babies?
Aye, you're a grandpa shrew now.
Oh, by the fur. Yeah, give me hold of that little fat fella. Oh, see, he knows me already.
The hares joined Martin and the others around a fire. 2 plump shrews served them with hot fruit pie, dandelion salad and bowls of fresh milk. Gonf sang around a mouthful of hot pie.
Oh, the woodship is a good ship, and we sail her anywhere. Rowed by mice, crewed by shrews, and often steered by hare. So hoist the anchor, loose the sails, give me a wind that never fails, and we sail the good ship, woodship, from here to Old Brock Hall.
He had to sing it twice again whilst the shrews danced to hornpipe with the hares. As the fires burned low, they settled back with full stomachs and renewed hope for the morn. Martin and Timberlisto slept side by side beneath the stars, each wrapped in a colourfully woven shrew blanket. Dinny dug a flattish hole for the hares.
Oh, thank you kindly, Mr. Mole.
You have such charming manners and swift digging.
Oh, and that beautiful velvety fur and strong claws.
Dinny wrinkled his face and tugged his snout, slightly embarrassed.
Brr, bless ye, be naught but an old missus.
The moon rose like a white china plate over the peaceful scene on the banks of the River Moss. Samina faced the troops gathered in the large mess hall. She had specially arranged the gathering by sending Bane's former mercenaries in first. Her own soldiers, led by Brog in his red velvet cloak, ringed the mercenaries by jostling them to the centre of the floor. Brog held up Bane's curved sword for silence as the Wildcat Queen addressed the assembly.
Bane is dead. Those who served under him have nowhere left to go now. Move from here, and you do it without supplies, weapons, or anything. Besides, those woodlanders out there would take care of you in short order. Any creature want to say something?
There was silence.
Right,
she continued commandingly.
From now on, you take your orders from me. Brog will see that you get rations and a billet each. Later, I'll see about appointing more officers and getting you some proper uniforms. Take over, Brog.
The weasel captain stepped up, twirling his new sword.
All together now! Hail Tarmina, Queen of Mossflower!
The response was less than enthusiastic. Tarmina made them repeat it until she was satisfied.
That's better. You can learn my list of titles later.
They stood in awkward silence, not knowing what to do next. In the hush that followed, Samina's ears rose visibly. Something was beginning to disturb her.
Dismiss, all of you. Brog, you stay with me.
When the hall was emptied, she turned to Brog with haunted eyes.
Listen, can you hear it?
She asked fearfully.
I can't hear a thing, milady.
Listen! It's water. Flowing. Dripping. Spilling somewhere. Oh!
Brog gave careful ear. Suddenly he brightened up.
Ah, yes, I can hear it now, my lady. You're right, there is water about somewhere. Damp, do you think?
The sound of water produced so distressing an effect upon Samina that she forgot to chide Brog. She cowered in a corner, paws covering her ears to shut out the dreaded noise. Flowing water, seeping water, creeping water, dark, icy, swirling water.
Brog, quick, get as many troops together as you can,
she ordered desperately.
Find out where that water is coming from and stop it! Stop it!
Brog saw the terror on his queen's face and fled the room. The whole of the garrison searched high and low, but not too low. Nobody, including Brog, was over keen to venture beneath the cells. Down there it was dark and cold. Down there was the lake where Gloomy used to be kept, and goodness knows what else. That night, as Samina sat huddled in her chamber, dripping water echoed in her imagination, never letting up. When the fear of water was upon her, the daughter of Vadorga was no longer Queen of Mossflower, Lady of the Thousand Eyes, or ruler of Katir. She was reduced to a crazed, terrified kitten, trembling at the sound of dripping water in the darkness, longing for the morning light to come stealing over the horizon. Something had gone radically wrong with the flooding. Bella slumped in the grass by the river with Skipper.
No joy, ma'am?
He asked solicitously.
I'm afraid not, Skipper. There seems to be only a trickle going down the tunnels.
Lady Amber joined the pair.
Aye, it seemed to be going so well at first. Do you think it's because it's summer and we haven't had much rain?
She suggested. Skipper chewed a blade of grass.
Maybe so. There's not a lot we can do about it anyway.
Maybe we could dam the river.
Bella offered tentatively.
Impossible, ma'am.
The skipper of Otters snorted.
Dam the river, Moss? Stony barnacles, you couldn't hope to stop a river that size from flowing to the sea.
Columbine stopped by to join the discussion.
Perhaps it'll fill gradually.
Aye, missy.
Skipper chuckled dryly.
We could all sit here growing old and watch it doing just that. Nope, we'll give it a bit more time. Then if things are still the same, we'll have to think of another scheme.
Lady Amber whacked her tail down irritably.
After all that underwater digging and tunnelling, then there's the lives that were lost too. Oh, it makes me mad.
The river carried on flowing its normal course, only a thin trickle diverting down the flood tunnels. It was the evening of the following day. Abbess Germaine and Columbine were helping Ben Stickle to take the little ones out for an evening stroll along the river bank. Ferdy and Cogs played with Spike and Posy, together with some young mice. They were sailing miniature boats which Ben had made for them. Germaine watched fondly as the young ones dashed boisterously up and down the bank, bursting with energy after being confined to Brockhall the past few days.
Be careful, Spike. Watch you don't fall in,
she called.
See my boat, Abbess, it's faster than Cogs.
Oh, look, Freddy is cheating. He's pushing his boat with his stick. No, I'm not. It's the wind. Mine has a bigger sail.
Columbine, mine has gone down the hole. Can you get it back for me, please?
Oh, sorry, Spike. It's gone for good now. Never mind. I'm sure Ben will make you another.
Ben Stickle crouched to look down the hole where the boat had vanished. He stood up, wiping his paws and shaking his head.
Flood tunnels. They're about as much use as an otter in a bird's nest. How far do you suppose they'll have filled up the lake under Katir? A paw's height? A whisker's level?
The abbess watched the rays of the setting sun through the trees.
Who knows, Ben? One thing is certain, though. Katir still stands, dark and evil as ever it was. What a shame that Formol and old Dinny's plan never worked.
They turned back to Brockhall.
Bella says there's no likelihood of rain. The weather is staying fine,
Ben added. Ferdy took the boat under his small spines.
Maybe they should have done it in the winter, Ben,
the abbess observed unhelpfully. Ben ruffled Ferdy's head.
Maybe frogs should have had feathers. Come on, young'uns, get your boats back to Brockhall and wash up for supper.
It was a warm night. As the Corrim sat about in the main room, an air of defeat hung over the company. Bella yawned, stretching in her deep armchair.
Well, any more suggestions?
There were none. The badger searched one face then another.
Then we must explore the possibilities open to us. But let me say this. I do not want to hear any more plans of mass attack or open war.
Skipper and Lady Amber shifted uncomfortably.
Formol and old Dinny still think that the flooding will work, if they can figure out certain alterations to the original plan.
Bella continued.
I know a lot of us do not agree with this, but personally, I think that the flooding is our only hope. With this in mind, I propose we visit the site tomorrow morning. Maybe with all the Corrim there, we might come up with a good idea. If not, then there's only one other sensible thing to do.
Goody Stickle wiped her paws on a flowery apron.
What might that be, Miss Bella?
To move all the woodlanders and everything we can carry away from here. We would travel east to Gingivere's new home. I've told you that he and Sandingon will accommodate us. We would find a welcome there, far away from Katir.
Skipper jumped up, unhappiness written on his tough features.
But that'd mean the Catters won!
Yes, why should we be driven out?
We already left our homes to come to Brockhall.
It wouldn't be the same in a strange place.
I was born around here, I'm not moving. Abbess Germaine banged a wooden bowl upon the table to restore order, but it broke in two.
Silence, friends, please! Let Bella speak!
She shouted above the din. Bella picked up the two halves of the bowl and smiled ruefully at Germaine.
Thank you, Abbess. Friends, there is more to my plan than first meets the eye. If we were to make this move I am speaking of, Then think of its effect upon Katia. Sarmina would not have won. She would not have chased us through the woods. We would have left of our own free will. Now, what would it accomplish? Imagine for a moment if we stayed in the east until next summer, or even spring. All the time we were gone, the water would continue to run down the flood tunnels. In autumn there is more rain, and the wind drives the river faster. Winter would see the current run under the ice, and on warm days the snow would feed the river and swell it. Finally, when the thaw arrived in spring, the river waters would flood, mighty and unchecked. Then we would truly see the lake rise beneath Katia. One other thing. Between now and next spring, my father, Bor the Fighter, may arrive. He alone can face Sarmina and defeat her. That is all. I have spoken my piece.
Formal rose and came to the table. Taking the two broken halves of the wooden bowl, he held them up.
We be like this, Hopjick. Split it up, we bain't much use. But if us and stickin together, then we'm use for her.
He pressed the two halves together for all to see. Old Dinny seconded him.
Oh, Formal be right, Miss Bell. Tis wonderful mole sense.
Columbine was allowed her say.
Let us do as Bella suggests. Tomorrow we will go to the flood tunnels. Then, if nothing can be done, we will follow her plan.
Immediate agreement followed.
See, Columbine,
the abbess said, picking up the broken bowl in her frail paws.
Old and weak as I am, yet somehow I manage the strength to perform a small bit of magic. Let us sleep now. It is late, and tomorrow we can tidy up here and wash the dishes. All except this one.
The abbess placed the broken halves carefully on the table.
Maybe a lesson in mole logic would not be a bad thing for a wildcat queen to learn.
Logalog was in his element as leader of his tribe once more. He roused the entire village an hour before dawn to get the ship underway. With 100 extra shrews to help, Wood's ship fairly flew along the river. When they were not rowing, they were punting, pushing or hauling on ropes.
Come on, shrews, hoist sail!
Logalog commanded.
Two of you on this tiller, make yourselves busy. Double up on the oars there. You two in a cross tree, stay your stumps. The chief is back. Let's show these bunny rabbits how to move a craft up our own river moss.
I beg your pardon, old logger thing.
Steady on with the name-calling there, O mighty leader.
Indeed, we're hares, not bunny rabbits. Do you mind?
Timberlisto sat on the deck sharpening pikes.
Odd lot, those hares,
he remarked.
Seasoned warriors, though,
Martin said as he counted swords and daggers.
Bor the Fighter taught them personally. Don't let the silly talk fool you. I wouldn't have them as an enemy at any price, and I was proud to fight alongside them against the sea rats.
Gonf sniffed the air. His whiskers twitched in the pre-dawn darkness that shrouded the riverbanks.
Trees, then. We must be in Mossflower. Dawn'll soon tell.
The young mole was painting a crude sign to cover the name Bloodwake. It bore the legend Woodship. He shook his head admiringly, wiping paint from his paws.
Garmfin, we'm home again. I'm a-feeling it.
The gruff voice of a shrew in the cross trees confirmed Dinny's words.
Sun arising eastward. Trees growing in close. We're in the forest.
Keep ahead straight,
shouted Logalog, standing out forward.
Fill those sails in before they snag on the branches. Lively there!
Martin joined him at the prow.
At this rate, we should make Camp Willow around midday. I never noticed us navigating the ford that crosses the path.
Logalog patted the rail.
A chance of in the dark. Good sailing, see? Old Woodship skimmed the shallows with a flat bottom. Nice and deep here, though. Easy going on the oars.
The sun rose above the woodland mists, revealing another hot summer day. Patterns of waterlight played along the bulkheads. Leaf and branch shadow mottled the decks. The oars pulled strong against the deep slow current as the big ship nosed its course further into the depths of Mossflower.
Chapter 45.
Brog watched Sarmina as she lay flat upon the parade ground with her ear to the floor. One of Bane's former mercenaries, a rat named Chinwort, tugged at Brog's cloak and asked,
"What's she up to, Captain?"
"Can't you see she's listening for water?"
"Water?"
"Aye, water, Wormbrain.
What do you suppose you'd be listening for? Strawberry cordial?
Sarmina sprang up, hurried across the parade ground and lay near the wall of the building. Listening intently, she waved a paw.
Brog, over here.
Yes, my lady.
Get down. Press your ear to the wall. Not up there, down here by the ground.
Oh, right. Hear me, lady.
That's it. Tell me what you can hear.
Nothing, my lady.
Are you sure, Brog?
I'm certain, my lady.
Well, I can hear water running.
But I can't, my lady.
Perhaps it's my imagination.
Strange thing, the imagination, my lady.
Are you sure you searched below the cells last night?
Positive, my lady.
Brog, if I thought you were lying to me... You did search there, didn't you?
The weasel captain noted the look of fear that flitted across Sarmina's features. He took full advantage of it.
Your Majesty, I personally went along to the place beneath the cells where it's all damp and green with slime and fungus. I searched around that underground lake where the gloomer lived. The place was full of strange echoes and dripping sounds. Maybe that's what you've heard. The place is always full of odd echoes and dripping noises down there in the blackness. Shall we go down there together and recheck it, my lady?
Sarmina could not stop her whole body shaking. She sat on the ground, unconsciously wiping her paws across her coat.
No, no, Brock,
she said nervously.
I won't be going down there. I'll be up in my chamber if you need me for anything.
She hurried indoors, brushing roughly past Chinwort, who had been lingering nearby, eavesdropping on the conversation. He winked knowingly at Brog.
I was with you last night. We never went anywhere near that place under the cells. What a pack of old fibs you fed her there, mate.
Brog grabbed the rat savagely by his ear and pulled him close, twisting hard.
Listen to me, bone brain. You keep your skinny mouth shut. I'm giving the orders now, not Bane.
Oh, let go. You're pulling me leg off.
Chinwort whined pitifully. Brog twisted the ear more cruelly.
I'll rip your tongue out too if I hear another word from you,
he said menacingly.
Let her go and search the deep, dark places if she wants to. I'm not going down there, not for all the cider in Katia. Unless, of course, you're volunteering to go down there alone.
Brog released the rat, who stood nursing his ear tenderly.
All right, I haven't seen nothing, heard nothing, and I won't say nothing. It's none of my business.
Brog contemptuously wiped the claws that had been nipping Chinwort's ear on the rat's tunic.
Good. Now, get about your business, pig's ears.
When the rat had scurried off, Brog stood sunning himself. He held the larder keys, had a new red velvet cloak, and a dangerous-looking curved sword. To all apparent purposes, he was the only captain at present serving in Katia. Life was beginning to feel fairly good. A packed lunch was served at the river's edge. Bella tossed an apple core into the water. They watched it bob to one side, then stick in the shallows. Skipper plucked it out and flung it far.
All I can say is that somehow the river moss is at a low ebb. Those holes were under water when we dug them, and now they're high and dry.
Ben Stickle lay flat out on the bank, gazing up at the cloudless sky.
Must be the mild spring we had. Look at it now. Hardly a week into the season, and it's like midsummer. It'll be late autumn before we see a drop of rain at this rate.
So, what is to be done?
Abbess Germaine asked, putting her milk beaker aside. Lady Amber stroked the space where her ear had been.
What do you think, Skip? Would it be possible to dam the river now that the level's fallen a bit?
The otter picked up a paw full of bank sand. It ran freely through his claws.
Marm, even as things are now, it'd be like trying to stop the sunrise at dawn. We don't stand a chance of even trying to block off a river the size of old Moss.
Chib perched on a young chestnut shoot. They continued talking, ignoring the robin.
Maybe if we dig the channels a bit deeper.
Tunnels, you mean?
Channels, tunnels, it's all the same, isn't it?
Chib called again.
It is if you're a squirrel, but to a mole or an otter, a channel and a tunnel are two completely different things.
Chib was becoming impatient.
Were that be correct? Olds is olds, and furrows is furrows.
What do you mean, furrows? A channel isn't a furrow. Chib, what's the matter with you? Some nut stuck in your throat, is it?
No, but I thought you'd like to know there's a ship coming up the river.
A ship?
What, you mean a boat?
I beg your pardon, but I'd have said a boat if I meant a boat. It is a ship. Full size, all black, white skull thing on the front, rolled up canvas sails, lots of oars. Ship!
Bella leapt up, spreading her paws wide.
Every creature take cover. Abbess, you stay with them. Be ready to make a dash for Brockhall if you hear my signal. Skipper, Lady Amber, come with me. We'd better go and investigate. Chip, did you see who was on the ship?
Afraid not. Soon as I sighted it, I came here to report.
Good work.
Bella congratulated him.
Come with us. We may need you to carry word back fast to those in hiding.
The woodlanders concealed themselves behind trees, in bushes, and under deep loam. The badger, the otter, the squirrel, and the robin struck out west along the bank, leaving the scene apparently deserted. Travelling light, they made swift progress. It was not far to the stretch of water where the ship was. Chib was the first to sight it. He fluttered up and down excitedly.
See, I told you so. Look at those two big poles sticking up above the trees. They're big poles that stick up on ships.
Skipper saw them too.
Masts they are, matey,
he explained.
Let's get in closer and take a better look.
On all fours, they crept to the river's edge, concealing themselves in the bushes as the ship hove into view.
You there! Come no further!
Bella called from her hideout in the forbidding boom of a warlike badger.
If you mean harm to any creature in Mossflower, put back to sea or deal with me!
There was silence from the black ship. On board Woodship, Martin and his friends lay on deck, hidden by the ship's sides. Dinny clapped a paw to his mouth, stifling a chuckle.
I know who that be a shoutin'.
Bella! Good old Bella of Brockhall.
There was a distant look in Martin's eyes.
For a moment there, she sounded like Boar.
Logalog nodded toward the shore.
Well, we can't lie here all day. Who's going to answer her?
Young Dinny solved the problem by standing up and bellowing.
Yeah, there be a beast aboard who's a perishing from love for one called Comberliney.
The creatures in the bushes dashed out in time to see the mole hit the water with a splash as Gonf heaved him over the side.
Help! I bain't much good at swimming.
Hold fast there, young Din!
Skipper called. He was in the water like a flash. He held young Dinny up as eager paws hauled him on board.
Skipper, you old water walloper.
Gonf, you young pie bandit.
Hello, Bella! Ahoy! It's me, Martin!
Martin the warrior, welcome home. Look who's here.
Lady Amber, where's your ear?
Logalog's voice rang out and suddenly Woodship was swarming with shrews, mice, hedgehogs, squirrels and hares.
Bring a hard over. Steady to the bank. Mind those masts on the trees. Steady that tiller. Watch your head in the shallows.
Chib flew to the ship and perched importantly upon the rail.
I must fly and conduct good tidings to those languishing in concealment.
As he flew off, Skipper chuckled.
Does that mean he's going to tell the others? Strike me colours. But this is a fine, handsome vessel. I never seen the like of it afore on Old River Moss. You didn't steal it, did you, Gonf? Is that two sails I spy? Wonderful. Blow me, look at the size of that tiller. This is a real sea-going craft, all right. What's that big skull on the fore tip? A fish? I don't believe there's a fish that big in all the world.
As Woodship berthed alongside the bank, Tim Ballisto held up his paws, laughing heartily.
Hold steady, Otter. You must be Skipper. I'm Martin's pal, Tim Ballisto. We'll answer all your questions soon enough.
Bella and Lady Amber came aboard, gazing about in awe as they hugged Martin, Gonf and Dinny. Bella smiled fondly at the warrior mouse as she patted his back.
Martin, you've grown. You really look like a full-blooded warrior now. What a beautiful sword that is. Is my father here? Where's old Boar the fighter?
A silence fell over the ship's crew. Martin gently took Bella's paw.
Come into the cabin with me, old friend. I have a long story to tell you.
There were many stories told that summer afternoon, while Martin and Bella remained in the cabin. Ferdy and Cogs, Spike and Posey sat among a group of woodlanders on the deck. The little hedgehogs wore brass sea rat earrings and carried a round shield each. Their eyes were wide and mouths agape as Gonf related the events which had befallen the travellers since they had left Mossflower to go questing for Salamandastron. Ben Stickle, Goody and the Abbess were equally impressed, smiling broadly when Gonf could not get his paw loose to illustrate a point because Columbine was clasping it tight.
Toads, matey, you've never seen toads as wicked as this lot. But when that eel came slithering out of the scream hole...
Was the eel as big as a tree, Mr. Gonf?
Twice as big, Spike. He'd have eaten you without even opening his mouth.
Lady Amber chuckled dryly.
Are you sure you saw mice with wings, Gonf?
Oh, I never saw them, but Martin and Dinny did. Isn't that right, Din?
Brr, oi! Girt leathery bird mouses are flying about inside a mountain.
Was that Salamandastron Mountain, Mr. Dinny?
Indeed it was not. That chap's inside our mountain? Never.
Fat chance, young fellow, Mahogwad.
Only fire, hares and badgers inside our mountain, old lad.
Gonf looked severely at Trubs and Co.
Who's telling this story? Me or you?
Yes, please be quiet and let Mr. Gonf tell the story, Trubs.
Rather, he's a much better storyteller than you.
Indeed, and isn't little Columbine pretty?
Then there was this beach,
Gonf continued enthusiastically.
Huge, big as Mossflower, nothing but sand as far as you could see, besides the water and the crabs.
Well, what's a crab, Mr. Gonf?
Well, it's like a spider, only 100 times bigger, with great nipping claws and lots of hard armour.
Did you and Martin slay the big crab, Mr. Gonf?
Well, no, Ferdy. Actually, I ended up dancing with it.
Was it a pretty lady crab, Gonf?
No, I think it was a jolly sort of male crab, Columbine.
Oh, then that's all right.
Here, I nearly forgot. This is a necklace of shells I made for you. Put it on.
Oh, thank you, Gonf. It's beautiful. Are they crab shells?
No, missy, them shells. Collected them myself, I did.
Well, Gonf was busy dancing with the crabs, I suppose. Oh, thank you very much, Dinny.
The mouse thief chose to ignore the reference to his dancing talent and continued the narrative. He told of the sands, the movement of the mighty sea tides, of the scavenging seabirds and the dead rat whose provisions saved their own lives. He described the meeting with Trubs and Co. and how they led the travellers to the mountain. Gonf went on to tell of the fabulous place called Salamandastron, its halls, caves, stairs and passages. He related to his amazed audience the saga of Bor the Fighter, of his roaring forge, gigantic battle sword, and his colossal bravery in the war against the sea rats. Gonf told of the struggle that ended with Bor and Ripfang going together to the gates of Dark Forest, and finished with the capture of the ship Bloodwake, now called Woodship. There was a moment's complete silence. Then the woodlanders flocked about him, babbling questions. Tim Ballisto and some former ore slaves saved Gonf from further harassment by lugging large copper tubs out from the galley.
Right, form a line here. It's Skilly and Duff time.
The young one sniffed the savoury odours as he explained.
Seafood and potato stew. That's Skilly. It'll put hairs on your chest like a giant sea dog. There's plenty of pepper and sea salt in it too. Finish it all up and show me a clean plate, then I'll dish you up some of my own warrior's recipe. Plum and chestnut duff in cream and beech nut sauce. Come on, there's plenty for everyone.
Night fell as Woodship rode at anchor, kedged safe in midstream. Martin emerged from the cabin, looking pale and sad after the news he had related to Bella. He called the six hares to him.
Go to the cabin. Bella wishes to talk with you,
he told them.
Tell her all you know of her father and the time you spent in his company on the mountain.
Rely on us, old chap.
Only the good times. Mum's the word, you know.
That's the ticket. How strong Bor was.
Like a father to us. A handsome badger, what?
He taught us all so much. He was so understanding.
How could we forget such a dear friend?
Before they slept, the travellers were closeted with the Corrim leaders to hear how Mossflower had fared in their absence. When they had learned all, they went out onto the deck. The little ones had been bedded down in the cabins, but the novelty of hammock sleeping lost out to weariness. Outside on the deck, every creature was assembled, packing the rails and rigging. Bella stood with her paw upon the tiller, red-eyed with grief, but calm and composed. Martin took command instinctively. The warrior mouse seemed to have grown in stature and confidence since his return. Every woodlander now looked upon him with a respect which bordered upon awe. He stood on the peak of the after-end gallery, the sword glinting under a full moon.
Friends, I have heard all, and my companions have told you everything that happened to us on our quest. Now I am back.
Abbess Germain nodded approvingly at the commanding figure.
Tell us what you want us to do, Martin.
The warrior mouse drew his sword and leaned on the pommel stone as his blade pierced the deck timbers.
Trust me, Mossflower will be saved. I have been thinking of a plan that I will not explain at present. First, I must see certain things before I know it can be executed properly. Now we must sleep until the morning. Tomorrow, after the little ones are somewhere safe, you will see what I intend. Do not worry any more. Our force has been doubled by the numbers who have sailed back with us, and we have seasoned warriors with us now. Bor the fighter cannot be here tonight, but I know that his strong spirit watches over us from beyond the gates of Dark Forest. He has sent me with this sword to make an end of Sarmina and all who follow her. I promise you that I will.
Every creature who saw Martin the Warrior that night knew without a shadow of doubt he was the one chosen to keep that promise. Book 3 of Water and Warriors. Chapter 46. Deep beneath Kater, the water level had risen gradually. Now it was above the rock sections removed by the moles. Hour by hour it had risen fractionally. To the casual ear, the trickling had stopped, but it was still adding silently to the volume as it seeped in from below the surface of the gradually rising lake. Standing at a high window, Sarmina breathed deeply, filling her lungs with the soothing summer breeze that blew in from Mossflower Woods. At last, the accursed dripping had stopped. She felt light-headedly happy. Dark, fearful night had given way to this beautiful, calm, sunlit morning, taking with it the haunting sounds of the water. Brog was right, she thought, even though he was only an oafish weasel. There was a certain sense to his logic. Imagination was a strange thing which played odd tricks upon an overwrought mind. Now, a new resolution was forming in Sarmina's devious brain, one she considered worthy of her talents. Mossflower must be conquered. The eagle was gone, Bane too, and her forces were stronger now with the addition of his one-time mercenaries. Sarmina allowed herself an audible snigger. That Bane. He had even taken the trouble to restore and repair all the Kater woodwork in anticipation of taking over from her, the Queen of Mossflower. Stupid fox. Furnishing herself with a bowl of milk and a roasted wood pigeon, she mentally thanked Bane for his supplies, adding another point to her favour. She sat down to breakfast in some earnest thought as to the final solution of the woodlanders. Sarmina rang the bell to summon Brog.
Your Majesty?
Ah, Brog. Put aside that sword and sit over here at my table.
Thank you, milady.
This morning I was thinking of appointing some new captains. However, I have since changed my mind, Brog. You will remain as the one and only officer giving out my orders, of course.
Brog sat to attention, his chest puffed out proudly.
Oh, thank you, milady, thank you. I'll make you proud of me. You won't regret this. Wait and see, I'll just...
Sarmina silenced the babbling captain with a wave of the wood pigeon carcass.
Enough chattering, Brog. Let me tell you what you must do to earn this great honour.
I'm yours to command, my queen.
Good. I want traps. Lots of traps, snares, nets, pits, anything we can think up.
Traps, milady?
Yes, traps, you great buffoon. I want traps laid all over that forest out there.
Brog grinned as recognition dawned.
We'll capture some woodland prisoners.
Capture, kill, maim, I don't care. As long as it makes those creatures afraid to set paw outside their hiding place, wherever they may be. I'll turn the tables on them and they'll never pen us in again. Give them a good long summer of my scheme, and they'll be only too willing to accept my terms. Those who are left after the traps begin their work.
Right, milady. I'll start today. How about some covered pits with sharpened stakes at the bottom?
Excellent, Brog. At last you're talking my language. Also, we could arrange some thin, strangling nooses concealed in the deep loam.
Great idea, my lady. How about some big nets and trip ropes?
Splendid! Make sure you have lots of poisoned hooks tied in the net meshes. Oh, and don't forget the old bent sapling trick with a hidden noose. You can always bank on some lumbering badger or hopping squirrel to step into it, eh, Brog?
Yes, my lady. Imagine all those woodlanders dangling upside down by the back paws.
Mmm, just like apples waiting to be picked.
Oh, we might just leave them to ripen until autumn before we pick them, my lady.
Very good, Brog. I never imagined you had such a sense of humour.
Oh, I have my moments, my lady.
Well, make sure your moments are all victorious ones from now on. My one and only captain.
Brog saluted awkwardly, knocking the chair over as he rose.
Yes, Majesty, I'll get right down to it this very morning.
Samina caught the end of his cloak, pulling him back.
There you go, rushing and dashing about like a sparrow after a fly. Priorities, Brog. If you must do a job, do it properly. Take your time. Gather the right equipment together, organise the troops into squads, give each one a team leader and offer rewards for the most ingenious traps and the best results. Do you see the idea?
Brog's face brightened at the power he was about to wield.
You're right, my lady. I'll spend all today organising, then we can make a start first thing tomorrow.
He departed, leaving Sarmina back at her high window, still clutching the wood pigeon. She destroyed the carcass by crushing it with a single blow and hurled it out of the window toward the forest.
Here! Have something to eat, woodlanders!
She shrieked.
You'll need it by the time autumn comes. I'll keep you penned up in your holes. We'll see who runs out of supplies first.
Abbess Germaine and Columbine were taking the little ones to stay with Gingerbeard and Sandingon. Bella drew a map to direct them. Ferdy and Cogs were torn between visiting their Uncle Gingerbeard and staying behind to become warrior sea dogs. Gonf had a word with them.
Listen, mateys, Martin and I can't be spared to guard the little ones. That's why we thought of sending you two. Imagine how much safer the Abbess and Columbine will feel knowing that Ferdy and Cogs are along to protect the convoy. I've made you a sling each and a pouch of throwing pebbles apiece.
Honest to goodness real ones, Mr. Gumph?
Aye, the same as Martin and I carry.
Ferdy had only one thing to say.
Right, Cogs, let's line these creatures up. I'll tell the Abbess and Columbine to lead. We'll protect the rear.
They departed amidst much cheering and paw-waving, both warriors getting their snouts wiped soundly on the corner of Goody's apron. The Corrim leaders set about the distribution of arms. Logalog and his shrews were proficient archers. They used the squirrel shoulder bows as standing longbows, and Lady Amber saw to it they were well supplied. The six hares fell gladly into Skipper's company. They were well liked by the otters, and proved to be as efficient with javelins as they were with their own big pikes, which were greatly admired by the otter crew. The loam hedge mice were unused to any sort of weapon, so they joined Goody Stickle to help in any way possible, healing, repairing, and running the field kitchen. Timberlisto and young Dinny took the moles. They banded together with the former ore slaves. Between them, there was an amazing variety of weapons. Bella strolled over to review them.
Well, well, who's in charge of this bloodthirsty crew?
She asked, receiving two salutes.
Captains Timberlisto and young Dinny of the Mossflower Irregulars, reporting for duty, ma'am.
Young Dinny brandished a dagger. He was decked out in a many-coloured fringed silk sash and brass seerat earrings.
Ha ha! We'm a right dreadful rabble and ready for fighting out!
Bella returned the salute as she tried to hide a smile. In the forward cabin of Woodship, Martin spoke secretly with five strong, experienced otters. When he emerged, the banks were thronged with a horde waiting upon his word. Every eye was upon him as he sprang from the side of the vessel and waded ashore through the shallows. Timberlisto had found his old battle armour in the sea-rat lockers. He came forward and buckled it on his friend in silence. Setting the round war helmet firmly on Martin's head, he strapped the breastplate on and buckled the greaves about the warrior's paws. Balor and the Hares presented Martin with a scabbard and sword belt which matched his sword to perfection. Martin turned to his army.
Let us go and settle the score with Cotea.
Brog cursed in the half-light before dawn as he tripped upon a coil of rope lying in the main hallway. The place was a jumble of snaring equipment. The weasel captain rubbed a bruised paw and wished he had not been so enthusiastic on the previous day. Picking up the rope, he hailed at a chinwort as the rat was settling down for a quick nap in the corner.
Come on, Dozy Chops, on your paws. I thought you were supposed to be helping me sort this mess out.
What about the others?
The rat yawned.
Weren't they all awake and helping?
Brog paused, letting go of the net he was dragging to the doorway.
Good idea. Why should I have to do it all myself? Chinwort, go and kick them out of their billets. Say that anyone who isn't ready to parade smartly will be reported to the Queen.
The threat worked. A few moments later, the hall was filled with sleepy soldiers. But seeing Sarmina was not about, they offered no help. They lounged about sitting on the stairs. Brog remembered Sarmina's advice.
Attention!
He called.
First one out on the parade ground carrying a trap gets double supper this evening. Anybody who lies about will be sentenced to half bread and water.
Chinwort grabbed three steaks and scuttled outside. The rest began half-heartedly picking up nets. Chinwort came hurtling back inside.
Captain, they're out there,
he said wildly.
What are you yammering on about now, rat? Who's out there?
Woodlanders, go and see for yourself.
Recalling the last Woodlander raid, Brog acted with caution. He poked his head around the doorway nervously, ready to pull back swiftly in case of arrows. The main gates had been flung agape. Standing in the open with the dawn mist evaporating in the sun around them were a number of creatures. A badger, a mouse in armour, and that brawny otter. Brog did not linger to see if there were others.
Chinwort, go and rouse the Queen, quickly,
he ordered. Sarmina came bounding down wide awake. She peered round the doorway with Brog.
So, at last they're showing themselves. Maybe we might not need the snares, Brog. Perhaps they've walked straight into a trap.
But, milady, they're carrying a white flag. Doesn't that make them peaceable?
Brog protested.
Don't believe all you see, Brog. You're carrying a sword, but that doesn't make you a soldier. Let's hear what they have to say.
As she stepped boldly out into the open, Sarmina whispered out the side of her mouth at Brog.
Get the archers. Wait for my signal.
None of the deputation was armed, except the mouse, who carried a sword at his side. Sarmina recognised him immediately. Also, the cheeky mouse thief standing behind him. She curled her lip in scorn.
Escaped prisoners and woodland rebels, what do you want?
We are the leaders of the Corum, come to deliver an ultimatum.
The warrior mouse's voice was hard and clear. Sarmina's mind was racing. All the leaders here in one place, they must not be allowed to escape alive. Had Brog organised those archers?
Well, here I am. Speak your piece.
The Wildcat Queen kept her voice deceptively calm. The warrior pointed a male paw at her.
Listen carefully to what I say, cat. You and your creatures have no right to tyrannise or try to enslave woodlanders. We are honest and free. Mossflower is our home.
You insolent upstart.
Sarmina laughed harshly.
I should have killed you when I had the chance. Do you realise who you are threatening? I am Sarmina, Queen of the Thousand Eyes, ruler of Mossflower.
Her adversary did not seem impressed.
I am Martin the Warrior, and I have not come here to make idle threats. This is what I have to say. Leave this place by sunset today. Take your army with you. Go where you will, but stay clear of Mossflower, and do not try to harm any woodlander.
Sarmina glanced over her shoulder. She could see the archer standing ready inside the doorway.
If I do as you say, what then?
You will be allowed to leave in peace, and none of your creatures will be harmed. You have my word as a warrior.
Sarmina shrugged. She held her paws open wide.
What happens if I choose not to leave?
She asked. Martin's tone was like Boar's hammer striking the anvil.
You will die here! You and all your vermin! I will bring this evil place down on your heads. Again, you have my word as a warrior.
Sarmina remained silent for a moment, as if considering both offers. When she spoke again, Her voice was flat and dangerous.
Big words for a little mouse. I will make no promises save one. You will all be slain where you stand.
At a signal, a score of archers leaped forth, ready to fire. She folded her paws, smiling sarcastically.
What do you say to that, little warrior?
Martin stood like a rock, showing no trace of fear.
Then we will stand here and be killed by your arrows. But look behind me at the trees and on your outer wall. Every woodlander who can draw bowstring or throw javelin is aiming straight for your treacherous heart. You would not get a paw's length before you were sent to the gate of Dark Forest. So carry on, cat. Tell your archers to fire. We will die so that Mossflower can be rid of you.
Samina's eyes shifted, dodging back and forth. Otters, mice, squirrels, hedgehogs, even hares. There seemed to be as many of them as leaves in an autumn gale, each with a weapon trained on her, every face grim with determination.
Down, bows!
She called to her archers in an urgent hiss. The soldiers pointed their bows to the ground, allowing the strings to slacken off. The Corrim leaders began walking backwards out of the gateway. Samina extended a quivering claw.
This isn't where it finishes!
She threatened, her voice shrill with rage.
Oh, no! This is only the start!
Martin's response rang back at her.
Until sunset tonight! We will wait outside for your answer!
Brog popped his head out.
Don't forget to close the gates after you!
As the gates closed, Bella's voice was loud and clear.
These gates are being shut, not to stop us getting in, but to keep you from getting out.
Samina dashed inside.
Get those nets and ropes out of my way! I want everybody up to the top of Katir, the very top! Hurry!
She urged. Gomph stood in the shadow of a sycamore with Martin.
Well, matey, it's done now. We're all in it, win or lose. No second chances. You heard the cat. This is only the start.
She's planning something, Martin.
Lady Amber said from up in the branches.
It's gone too quiet in there for my liking.
Martin looked up.
Mine too. Tell the leaders to draw their companies back under cover. Let us wait and see what move she'll make.
Whispered orders went out, and the woodlanders moved back, blending into the green shade and mottled shadow. The outside wall was deserted. Not a whisker, paw or weapon showed anywhere. Eerie silence fell upon the soft morning warmth, broken only by a faint rustle of breeze through the treetops. Filing silently up a wooden loft staircase, Samina led her forces out onto the flat square battlemented roof of Katir. Signalling them to lie low, she peered over the top of the wall.
Quietly now. Archers, come forward. Keep your heads down and station yourselves around these battlements. Be ready to fire at my command.
The archers deployed stealthily. They lay waiting. Samina nodded to them.
Fire!
A deadly hail of arrows flew earthward. She watched as they vanished into the treetop foliage. There were no screams or cries from below. Silence reigned.
Fire again!
A second volley of shafts plunged down into the green fastness. Still nothing. Further back in the woodland, Skipper munched an oat cake.
I wonder if the cat's allowing her troops an early snack.
Tim Ballisto polished an apple on his fur.
Shouldn't think so. Look at those arrows peppering the trees where we stood a moment ago.
The woodlanders sat eating, watching scores of arrows striking the branches and soft earth, just out of range of where they sat. A lone hedge mouse was sharing a bowl of milk with Gonf.
Shouldn't we be firing a few arrows back, sir?
He asked boldly.
No, matey. Waste of time. Too high. Besides, we'd give our position away to them. Let them waste more shafts a while yet.
Unless we could get high up in those trees on the north side.
Barklad said as he nibbled a stick of celery.
Could you hit them from there?
What? Good squirrel archers? Of course we could, Martin.
The warrior mouse pondered.
Possible, I suppose. But we'd need something to decoy them into concentrating their fire over this way. Any ideas, Amber?
Samina waved her paw for the archers to cease fire. Some of them did not see her and kept shooting.
Stop! That's enough, fools!
She shrieked.
Can't you see they're not there?
The arrows stopped. A fox called Bentbrush turned to his companion, a rat named Wegg.
Bane would have thought of something to weed him out,
he said nostalgically.
Like what, for instance?
Well, like... I don't know, but he'd have thought of something.
If he was so smart, why is he so dead now? Look, the bushes are moving down there.
Salmina was alongside the Rat in a flash.
Where? Show me!
She demanded eagerly.
Down there, right by where we were shooting.
The fringe bushes at the wood's edge were indeed shaking and rustling. Salmina smiled with satisfaction.
So, we weren't just wasting arrows. Some of them are hit. Over here, you lot. Give those bushes a good raking with arrows. I don't want anything left alive down there. Ready? Fire!
The shafts went through the bushes like a shower of rain. Lady Amber climbed high in an elm until she glimpsed the back of the soldiers over the battlements. Notching an arrow to her bowstring, she murmured to the 12 stout squirrels who were following her example.
3 shots, quick as you like, then away from here.
The shafts flew straight and through, striking the huddled group who were firing upon the bushes. Salmina was saved by the body of Bentbrush, who fell across her, 2 arrows protruding from his back. There was nowhere to run on the open roof. A score of soldiers were struck by arrows. Before they could recover and retaliate, the squirrels had gone. Logalog and Formal sat some distance from the bushes. Well hidden, they tugged vigorously at lengths of rope that were attached to bush and branch.
Yeah, how long do us'n't keep a tugging ropes?
Take a rest now, Formal. They've stopped firing.
Lady Amber and the squirrels swung in from the high branches.
Good decoy, Martin,
she congratulated him.
We gave them something they won't forget in a hurry. Nearly got the cat, but a fox fell across her.
Yes, a clever strategy, but you must keep on trying to think one jump ahead of Salmina. She'll come back at you with something else if I know anything of warfare. The cat is as cunning as any sea rat, you'll see,
Logalog warned. Martin pointed to Chib descending from the blue.
Here comes my spy now.
I overheard the cat giving orders.
What was she saying?
Well, most of it wasn't fit for the ears of any decent creature, but she's left a token force on the roof and is taking the rest downstairs.
Martin unsheathed his sword.
That may mean she intends coming out to make an attack on us.
Bella nodded.
Well, she can't get through the gateway. I've locked and wedged that gate myself.
Then they'll probably be coming over the walls,
Skipper interrupted.
This is what I've been waiting for, hearties. A good chance to use my pike hairs.
Oh, we'll be there, old bean, piking away.
Rather. Done this sort of thing before, don't you know?
Jab, thrust and whatnot. All part of the game.
Young Dinny waved a dagger at his crew.
Who are? We be right aside ye. Wouldn't miss it for nothing.
Martin called order.
I want no pitched battle or wholesale killing,
he told them firmly.
You must do just enough to defend our position and send them back in retreat over that wall. Lady Amber, keep squirrels high in the trees. Have them take brushwood shields for protection. They must keep those archers on the roof pinned down.
A weasel called Foul Whisker peered around the doorway to the parade ground.
All clear, my lady. They think we're still on the roof,
he reported.
Good. Get across the open ground quickly and don't drop those ladders.
The attack force was a large one. Brog led them across the parade ground to the wall.
Right, you lot. Set the ladders up and get climbing,
he ordered. They scaled the walls until the top of the stonework was thick with soldiers. Nervously, they watched the trees until Brog came up last, panting hard.
See anything?
No, Kevin. All clear.
Then haul these ladders up and let them down the other side.
As the last troops set port on the woodland side, Martin appeared from the trees. He was backed by 6 hares carrying pikes. Brog grinned. Not a very large reception.
Troops, charge!
Otters poured out of the undergrowth from behind Martin and the hares. From the left and right flanks, a horde of Mossflower irregulars sprang from hiding, closing like pincer jaws. Pike clashed upon spear as the two sides met, and battle cries arose.
Death to the Woodlanders! Martin for Mossflower!
A fox struck down an oar slave. He was about to finish him off when Skipper thwacked him hard with a rock-laden sling, knocking the spear from his paws. The 6 hares were causing devastation, with their pikes easily outreaching Corsair's spears. Soldiers facing fierce otters ran to the left or right, only to see the way barred by mobs of shrews, mice, moles and oar slaves. Prog was no coward when his blood was roused. He fought madly to reach the warrior mouse who carried the whirling sword. Martin took a stoat low down, whipping the blade up and round at head height, as Bor had shown him. Turning, he felled a weasel. Then Brog was upon him, bullying forward. Unable to use his spear, the captain threw himself at the warrior mouse. Martin saw him coming. Falling backwards and throwing his paws up, he caught Brog off balance, tossing him neatly. Skillfully, Brog landed on all fours. Grabbing his curved sword, he came thundering back with the point held low. Martin rolled to one side, leapt straight up, and chopped down with a double-pawed swing. The weasel captain found himself holding a sword handle from which the blade had been completely shorn. He backed up to a tree with Martin's sword at his throat.
Back over that wall! Now!
The warrior mouse's voice snapped like a whip. To Brog's surprise, the blade lowered. He found himself dashing for the wall, shouting aloud.
Retreat! Retreat! Back to Katia!
Skipper hefted a javelin, taking aim at Brog, but Martin's sword pushed the weapon aside.
Enough, Skip! Let them go.
The vanquished troops fought tooth and claw among themselves to be first over the wall lest the warrior mouse change his mind. Loam Hedge Mice moved in to help the wounded. Martin, Skipper and Gonf stood breathing heavily.
You should have let us finish it, Martin.
No, Skipper,
Martin said firmly.
The only time I would have allowed that was if the cat had been here.
Gonf sheathed his two fighting daggers.
Blow me, matey. We had them whipped there. Why did you let him go?
Martin wiped his sword on the grass, staring at the slain of both sides strewing the woodland floor.
To show them we are not evil,
he said at last.
We only want what is ours, and now I think they know we're strong enough to get it. Could you not see the fight is going out of those soldiers? They're beginning to look as if they need food. Their larders must be just about empty, and only the fear of their cruel queen keeps them going. Besides, when I put my plan in motion, with the help of some otters and my friend Tim Ballisto, Katia would be truly broken and defeated until it is only a bad name to frighten little ones off to bed with in the seasons to come.
Bella shook her head sadly as she picked up the limp form of a squirrel who had been a former ore slave.
You did right, Martin,
she told him.
There is no greater evil than killing. I don't care whether they call it war or justice. Life is precious.
A Loam Hedge Mouse wiped away a tear as she turned to Tim Ballisto.
I think Bella's right,
she added.
Aye, and so do I, young missy. But what can Martin do? He has to lead us to a lasting peace against a cruel and cold-blooded cat,
Tim Ballisto said gently. There was no more fighting that day. Both sides halted to lick their wounds. Martin waited for sunset, while Samina berated her soldiers as she tried to think up fresh schemes for victory. Chapter 47. It had been a hot afternoon. The sun started to redden against a dusky purple sky as Samina ventured to stand at a high window. There was the warrior, standing armour-clad on top of the wall. He had probably used one of the ladders left behind by the cowards who had retreated. Samina raked her claws across the window ledge in helpless fury.
What do you want, mouse?
As she asked the question, she was groping furiously for the bow and arrows which she kept close to paw.
The sun is nearly set, Samina. Remember the ultimatum I gave you this morning?
The wildcat queen played for time as she fumbled with bow and arrows beneath the window ledge.
Tell me again, mouse. Refresh my memory.
The message has not changed. There is still time for you to take your army out of here and leave us in peace,
he said reasonably.
You will not be harmed if you leave before the sun is down.
The arrow came speeding through the air and struck Martin in the side. The warrior mouse flinched and swayed with pain, but he stood firm, Samina bit her lip until blood flowed. Martin turned and painfully mounted the ladder, with the shaft still sticking in him. As he went, his words were like a final knell.
Then it is finished! I will bring this place down around you stone by stone! You will travel to the gates of Dark Forest!
The troops sitting in the mess hall heard every chilling word in the failing light.
We should have got out of here long ago,
a ferret called Ditchpaw snarled at Brog.
With an army our size, we could live off the fat of the land anywhere.
Others joined him.
Aye, why should we fight for this old ruin? It's hers, not ours.
Ours with Bane. He let us fight and keep our plunder sacks filled. There isn't even enough to eat in this stinking place.
I don't know what the mouse has planned,
But you can bet he really means business.
Aye. We must have been mad ever to think woodlanders were soft.
Right. Look at the mates we look.